Batman Standing, here with me, Paul Stevenson, on Republic Broadcasting Network. On this Sunday, the 6th of July, a couple of days after the 4th of July, obviously for you guys in the United States, and it's 5:30 a.m. here in London, so we're pretty up to date. That's about 12 hours, more or less, since this, from when you'll be listening to this show. And, of course, do remember to keep RBN on the air, where you can hear the kind of content that you simply just don't hear anywhere else, where all things are on the table. So do remember to go to the homepage, Republic Broadcasting Network. You'll see the various options there. Patrick, give us the details. You know them off the top of your head. I should. Shame on me.
Okay. So send in a check or money order or well-concealed cash to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it into 1-800-724-2719. The operator is standing by.
All right, great. And obviously I'm joined with the one and only Dr. Patrick Slattery. Welcome to the show, Patrick, and thank you for doing it. It's after midnight where you are. It's 12:30 where you are, I think.
Yeah, but it's okay. We'll do this thing.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Are you still shilling for your own money?
It would still be helpful if things have improved a little bit, but it still would be helpful if you want to do that. You can do it on PayPal, Stevenson, Stevenson, _ P5 at sky.com. But things have improved because people have donated a little bit. I'm almost out of the woods. But one last little push wouldn't do any harm if anyone is wanting to be generous. As I say, Stevenson, Stevenson, _P5 at sky.com. My other email, in case you have problems with that email, is paulstevenson839@gmail.com. Okay, thanks for mentioning that, Patrick.
Yeah,
We don't like to ask because we don't want to compete with the network because the network is listener funded, you know.
John Statmiller told me we can ask for money and sell products and whatever we want to do. That's what he told me. I don't know if the policy has changed since he passed away, but I don't think it has. I do want to just mention real briefly that the New York mayoral race, the race for mayor, the election, is attracting
mayoral.
A lot of it, mayoral, and it is attracting a lot of attention. And this November, there will be multiple candidates on the ballot, including, I expect, a candidate from the Rent is Too Damn High party. This is a party in New York, and it gets on the ballot, and it's called the Rent is Too Damn High party.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem with London. And the other thing is, I mean, we, you know, with a lot of controversy over here, it's just, I mean, the government's a joke. I mean, they are short of money, apparently, so they tried to cut $5 billion from welfare. No one seems to have had the testicular fortitude, including Nigel Farage, to point out. Has anyone noticed we've been given exactly $5 billion for the last 2 years to Ukraine? So they basically want to take $5 billion from the British people who are on welfare and give it to the Ukraine. And, you know, the problem is that the fiscal and economic policies have made it so difficult for people. I mean, look at COVID, the wrecking ball that was. That they have caused people to rely on welfare. With immigration, for example, rents have gone up so ridiculously. Try getting anywhere in London. You know, I was working for a garden company last week. It's just a nightmare trying to get anywhere. The place is just, you know, heaving. And, you know, I understand that people want to come here. The doors are open. There's some economic opportunities. It's another thing I wanted to talk to you about as well. But it just, you just see people who are strung out, just burnt out all the time. Honestly, you just see people who are just sleeping on the, what we call it, the tube over here. Everyone's just sleeping and just miserable and stuck in traffic and trying their best to make a living. And then what they do earn, the taxes have gone through the roof. Inflation's gone through the roof. Rents have gone through the roof. And people look around, and I know this from talking to people. They say, you know, we're just constantly just burnt out. And for what? I mean, we don't really make any profit on anything. I mean, some people do. But your average person is just like, spends his whole, it's kind of almost like slavery. It's getting that way where it's just like, there's no, the quality of life has diminished so much, you know, with inflation, high rents, because of course the landlords can decide, pick and choose what they want. There's so much demand. Stuck in traffic, you know, for 90 minutes on a journey that if, you know, if you'd even half the traffic, it would take you about 30 minutes. It really does make it challenging, you know. But the other thing I was going to mention to you is about the influx of people into this country. You know, if our, and I put in quotes, our countries, or those who rule it, we know who we're talking about, if they'd stop making life so miserable for these other countries around the world, suppressing them all the time, you know, sanctions, bombing them. I mean, how many people have we had from the Middle East for the Israeli wars? You know, how many countries have got such a miserable existence because of sanctions? And where do they end up? Well, the borders are open there in Europe, don't you know? So, you know, that's a whole other topic. And, of course, that's Jewish interests as well. Mm-hmm. Let's keep our hegemony. Let's keep our foot on the neck of these people, whether it's China, whether it's Iran, you know, whether it's India. We can't let these people be a threat, even Mersheimer, you know, realist, you know. You know, so these people, I'm not saying that we're entirely responsible, but we certainly don't do anything to help a lot of countries, you know, so that they can flourish. I mean, with the rise of the global south, and then you're going to see a collapse, I think, eventually in the economies. I mean, we're heading that way anyway. What's the chances that a lot of people who have come here are just going to say, okay, I'm going back. I'm going to Singapore. I'm going to India. I'm going to China if I can. You know, whatever. You know, I don't know.
Well, I don't know. With the shenanigans in the Middle East, Syria and potentially, well, Iraq before, but certainly Syria and potentially Iran, Afghanistan. So on the one hand, you get, you get Israeli domination of the Middle East. So you're promoting Israeli hegemony in the Middle East. And then on the other hand, it creates a wave of immigration into predominantly Europe from those countries, but also to America. And that's known in the Jewish community as a twofer. You're getting two things, two for the price of one. Yeah, you're screwing the Middle Easterners in their countries, and then you're screwing the white people in their countries.
Yeah.
And that's a twofer.
Yeah, and, you know, Donald apparently, you know, he loves Europe. Well, does he? I don't know. But they support all these wars, and it's like, Donald, our borders are open. In case you hadn't noticed, and then you're just all these people are, well, Biden, whoever, all these people are being displaced for Israel in the Middle East. Where do you think they go? You know, Libya, you blew a hole for a corridor for sub-Saharan Africans to come up through Libya, which was a stable place, and they're just now a nuisance coming through in boats and everything else. I mean, they displace these people with these foreign policy decisions for Israel, and they end up here. But it's unsustainable, and you know that's coming from someone who does not. You know, I do not discriminate against people. I don't even blame people for wanting to come here. There's a lot of decent people who come here who just want to make some money. I mean, there's a lot of scumbags come here too, of course. But whatever way you look at it. It just makes life difficult for everybody. It really does. It's just too many people, you know. Just even on the traffic alone, you just see people just sitting there, you know, moving about 1 mile in 20 minutes. You know, this is after people have done their day's work and just want to get home. Maybe most people finish at 5. And it's you know, you think I'd be quicker walking home. You know, I just don't have the energy. You know what I mean? Sad eyes.
Well, so, I'm just going to mention that, you know, this has been going on a long time with messing around in other countries and then having the so-called refugees show up. My late mother was a public school teacher, and 40 years ago, I remember her saying, I always know where the CIA is operating because the kids from that country will always show up in my class.
Yeah, well, there you go. Exactly. That's really interesting. And that kind of hits the nail on the head, really. Yeah. But talking about staying on that theme, mentioned briefly off air, there's an interesting conversation that arose from a couple of guys that I like listening to. Peter Lavelle, who's a host on Crosstalk on RT, and another guy, George Samueli, they're discussing Trump and Netanyahu to meet again. And the title of the video is Gaza ceasefire really on the cards? So they're talking about the whole Gaza situation and also Iran and everything else. And Bibi coming over, knocking on the door again, wanting more violence, you know. And, you know, basically constantly looking for American support and more wars. So then they got talking about Samueli kind of threw a curveball at Peter Lavelle, who was referring to what's happening in Gaza as a genocide. And Samueli sort of questioned him, well, is it a genocide? And then they got into it. So, I mean, it didn't get like too heated, but let's play it. It's interesting because there was some interesting insights that could come out of it. I'd like your opinion on it. So I'll play that, okay?
Sounds good.
Probably, let's give it 5 minutes and see where we're at.
Thing is, there's not going to be any kind of a deal. I mean, because essentially we've been here before, and you know, does anyone really believe anything that Israel promises? No. I mean, so I mean, George, we could get to a situation where Netanyahu agrees to withdraw the IDF, but not allow any aid in. It's the same.
Oh, right. So that has to be part. That's going to be part of any deal. You know, uncontrolled, unconditional release of aid into Gaza would be part of any kind of a deal.
I can say yes. We have certain parameters and certain. Yeah, in principle, we're for it, and then we see. Right. But Hamas keeps stealing it. What can we do? Okay. That trove keeps coming up over and over and over. Actually, there is a counter to that, which Israeli supporters hate. If you're worried about Hamas commandeering the aid and selling it for a profit, well, who has money now in Gaza? I mean, I can't figure that out. Just flood the place. Flood the place with food. Flood it, okay? Then it will be less valuable because there's such a quantity, and then people can eat, okay? Right. So if you're worried about that, just do the reverse. Just flood it in where there's so much food.
Right.
Of course, they don't want that to happen.
Miranda. Yeah.
Okay.
And we're back. We're having some technical issues today. The one aspect of it that is interesting, and we've been waiting for this for some time, will there come a point within Israeli society that they're going to say, we're just tired of this war. We can't go on. We're just sick of it. We want this to come.
You mean the genocide?
Right. Well, all right. Fine. You know, whatever you want to call it.
Well, I mean, I think it's...
Okay, what if you want to call it? I mean, I'm hesitant to use that term, but if you want to use that term, then go ahead. But I mean, is there a point?
Maybe after 21 months, George. I mean,
well, I don't. I tend to stay away from these emotive terms. I think it's a very
emotive. That's facts.
Well, it's it's a legal term. It's a legal term. It goes by the Genocide Convention, and you know, you have to go through all the definitions as to what constitutes genocide and so on. So, you know, I kind of prefer not to use those terms until there's a legal determination. But it, you know.
Was there a genocide against the Armenians, against the Jews?
I haven't used that term.
Against the Jews?
Well, I would think that that would be the closest one could say that that was the genocide. But in other cases, I think, you know, there's always the question, which was there an intent? Is there an intent to wipe out a people, wipe out of existence a people? Then you have to define which is the people, and is everything that's taking place driven by the goal of wiping out a
people? What else can the Israelis do other than nuking them?
Well, no, I mean, after all, you know, they haven't wiped out the people. I mean, there's still, you know, a very substantial population. Not for want of trying. They could absolutely try a lot harder. They have the technical means of doing so, and they haven't done that in the West Bank. I mean, they've made life horrific, there's no question, but all I'm talking about is that legal term.
I don't think you really need a legal term. I mean, my eyes tell me something that... I'm not a lawyer, so for me, the term is applicable. Okay, I'm a little surprised, but anyway.
I don't know why you're surprised. I've never used the term in all this time. I've never referred to it as a genocide. Just as I didn't refer to the term genocide when people made that comment in relation to Yugoslavia. I've never used that term. People talk about that. Russia. I mean, people throw around this term an awful lot. Without any, you know, any.
I don't say it lightly.
Use the legal definitions as to whether it is constitutes genocide. No one has made that determination. You know, the International Court of Justice did not make any such determination. So that's why I hesitate to use it. I mean, you can use it if you want.
But I don't use it lightly. Okay. Like for Yugoslavia, I never used that term.
Right. But yeah, I mean, I just don't do it. I mean, there are plenty of other terms you can use. You know, mass slaughter, mass starvation.
Well, I mean, what's the issue for you? Is it intentionality?
There is the intentionality and a specific intentionality. The specific intentionality that a people has to be wiped out of existence. So mass slaughter and atrocities and unimaginable cruelty, those can be given. You know, okay, with that you but to say that the goal is to wipe out the people and wipe them out of existence, that's what you'd have to establish.
Yeah, so you would need a court order, a court determination.
Whatever it's a court determination, I think would have to you'd have to have some more evidence that that's what they have done. I mean, if you say that in the space of 18 months or 19 months, they wiped out, they killed, let's say, 60,000 Palestinians, 60,000 out of 2 million, that's still quite a small percentage. You're still talking about,
I don't think we
3-4%. You can't really go from 3-4% to say, well, they intend to wipe out the people. And then which people are we talking about? The people of Gaza, you talk about the people of West Bank, you talk about all Palestinians, you have all of this.
Most people that use the term are thinking in terms of Gaza specifically.
Right, but then when that's not a people, because a people is the Palestinians, the West Bank and Gaza constitute a single entity.
Well,
they've only committed these atrocities, horrific atrocities in Gaza, which is in one part of it. They haven't done that in the West Bank.
Well, the Palestinians,
and again, it's really 3-4%. 3-4% is simply, that's not 100%.
That's being very careful. That's what has been read. That's what, you know, documents proven. I think there's a lot of people still under the rubble Right. In an environment like that, keeping the book straight seems to be a bit would be challenging, to say the least. Okay. But I mean, going back to Netanyahu's trip, I mean, he.
All right.
So that's a can of worms. I will just say this. I'm not sure where George is having a problem with intentionality. Also,
okay, yeah, the intentionality is very clear. We can talk about that.
Yeah. The other thing is, I know it's probably, when you look at the comments, which is obvious, people just rounded on George. And, you know, okay, he's talking retardedly, in my opinion. But most of the time, George is on the money, and he's quite a likable fella. But it's interesting how quickly people turn on someone for, you know, putting their foot in it, really. Because he sort of committed to that position. He's probably going to regret it and go away and think about it. But anyway, side issue. Thoughts. There's one insight I had made quickly, is that from the intentionality point of view, I think it's abundantly clear, and there is simply no doubt at all that the intentionality is there, whether it's starvation, whether it's killing UN workers and food people trying to get in there, even killing them. So the message is, we're trying to kill these people. Don't be coming in to feed them, because we'll kill you too. You know, what the recent thing is, you know, that they're coming to get food and they're being shot. They've been bombing, dropping these massive ordinances on very densely populated areas, claiming they got, one Hamas guy who was involved in October 7th or something. So the intentionality is very clear. But because obviously, the gold standard of genocide, of course, is the Nazis against the poor Jews. But if you accept that the Israelis have been trying as best they can to wipe out the Palestinians, and there's no doubt about that, especially in light if you understand the Greater Israel plan and everything else. Well, despite the fact they're trying so hard, it does take time. But yet we're supposed to believe that 6 million Jews, while the Nazis were, while the Germans were, fighting on all fronts, that they somehow managed to wipe out. What's the time period that the Jews claimed that the Holocaust occurred? 6 months? A year? 2 years?
Well, yeah, the so-called homicidal death camps.
Yeah, so all these people died in a real short. Well, it happened within 4 years, anyway. You know, during the period of the war, and it's usually accepted that in the latter stages of the war that it came to light that this great Holocaust had occurred. So the Germans were obviously capable of pulling something off in a way that the Israelis are not, you know. So I think it's another point to throw the nonsense of the Holocaust into perspective, and something I hadn't really thought of. It does take a lot of time, really, unless you're just going to drop a nuke on Gaza. It takes time to wipe out a people, but there's no doubt about it. They're trying. But yet we're supposed to believe that the Germans, who are fighting the Russians, are fighting the Americans, are fighting the Allies, that they somehow managed to shovel all these Jews into the ovens in a very short period of time. So anyway, that was one insight, and you thought that was a good comment.
No, that's I think so. I want to address some of these specific issues. So first of all, the intentionality. Which is part of the definition. Oh, actually, I've pulled up the Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. This is from the United Nations website. And so there's a United Nations Convention on Genocide. It was, and it's only 4 pages long. And it's not particularly dense text either. So anybody can search for this. You just search up, do a search for UN Convention on Genocide. You'll find it. Approved and proposed for signature and ratification or accession by General Assembly Resolution 260A, and then in parentheses, Roman numeral 3 of 9 December 1948, entry into force. You go, scroll down a little bit. Having considered the declaration made by the General Assembly of the United Nations in its Resolution 98, and then Roman numeral 1, dated 11th December 1946, that genocide is a crime under international law, contrary to the spirit and aims of the United Nations, and condemned by the civilized world, blah, 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 it is hereby agreed in hereinafter provide as hereinafter provided. So Article 1, the contracting parties confirm that genocide, whether committed in a time of peace or a time of war, is a crime under international law, which they undertake to prevent and to punish. Article 2, this is what I want to get at. This is a definition. So in the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent, okay, so we have intent, the intent to destroy in whole or in part. So it doesn't have to be you're intending to wipe out every single person. And by the way, the Jews were obviously not wiped out every single person, right? And if that's this guy's...
And by the way...
Yeah.
And by the way, did the Germans wipe out all the Jews? Or was there one or two left? You know, it was the greatest rise. I was thinking this last night. It was the greatest resurrection in human history, that they emerged the most powerful group of people in human history after the Holocaust.
Yes. How about that? So
yeah.
I'm going to read this sentence. So in the present convention, genocide means any of the following acts committed with the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such. A, killing members of the group. That's one way. Okay, killing members of the group. B, causing serious bodily harm or mental harm to members of the group. C, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. All three of those have clearly been met, A, B, and C. D, imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group. Not necessarily. But that actually, though, you could apply that to European countries. So, yeah, to us. And then E, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. Which actually they're starting to get into a little bit of that in Canada and some other places. But anyway, with regards to some of the things he was saying... Well, I mean, they're taking away children at least from parents, like Christian parents who in Canada, from Christian parents or parents who object to having their kids trannified. I mean, that's been a thing in Canada. That's starting up, but anyway, I don't want to get
off.
Where
are the kids going?
To the parent, like if you got divorced parents and the dad doesn't want the kid trannified, but the mom thinks that would be fashionable, then the dad loses rights. This has happened.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org, smash that donate button, like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show.
Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
Extendivite, a 7-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Have you ever planted a tree for your home garden, orchard, or farm? Well, you'll know how frustrating it is when deer don't stop nibbling at them and you lose years of growth. We have a very economic solution called Tree Savers. It's basically a greenhouse tube at a very economical price. Most of the tubes are $3 to $4, depending on the length that you want. Very easy installation. Check us out at furion.com. Serious growth. That's furion.com. Susanna's Secret Real Essential Oils of Nature would like to thank you and RBN listeners for your previous purchases. We're announcing that we have a new waterless diffuser in stock with a full 1-year warranty. You just insert the bottle to the top, screw it in, tip it upside down, set your timer, or it's also motion activated at furion.com. That's furion.com.
Are you really prepared? There's one critical piece most people forget. When disaster strikes, the most powerful survival tool isn't in your hands, it's in your head. But here's the hard truth. Knowledge disappears fast when the grid goes down. That's why we created the Preparedness Tablet, the first and only off-grid digital library designed specifically for survival situations. We've done the work for you. This rugged, portable tablet comes preloaded with a massive library of practical knowledge. Food preservation and storage, emergency medical care, off-grid living and homesteading, security, defense, and more. It's indexed, searchable, organized, and powered by a free solar charger, so you'll never be without it. It also comes with a protective hard case, and you could upgrade it with supplemental survival files and EMP protection. Whether it's a power outage, social unrest, or a full-blown crisis, this tablet gives you instant access to skills that save lives. From treating wounds to growing food, even saving cherished family documents and photos, this preparedness tablet is your silent partner when things go sideways. You can't know it all, but you can carry it with you. Preloaded with survival knowledge, runs 100% off-grid, backup and store your own files, lightweight, portable, and solar-powered. Join thousands of Americans closing the last gap in the emergency prep. Visit our website now and get peace of mind in the palm of your hand. The preparedness tablet also makes a thoughtful and potentially life-saving gift. Invest in yourself, protect your family. Visit www.comcoms.link. That's www.comcoms.link. Be ready, be smart, be the one who plans ahead. We also offer custom portable radios that come pre-configured for your local area. Included with these versatile radios is free basic training to get you up to speed quickly on how to use your radio. Visit our website today and learn all about our unique products. Comcoms.link. comcoms.link.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new Ease-Off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an Ease-Off drop-in lift?
Our Ease-Off is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the Ease-Off installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my Ease-Off?
Go to easeoff.com. That's EAZEOFF.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. Easeoff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
Ease Off LLC. 417-932-6419.
Rights. This has happened.
Okay, all right.
But at any rate, I don't want to go down that alley.
Yeah, sure.
I want to stick here. So this guy was saying that, well, because they're only killing people in Gaza, they're not killing the people in West Bank that much. Mostly killing people in Gaza. So it's, well, again, it's in whole or in part. He's, you know, if he wants to say the Gazans are not an ethnic group or a national group, they're part of the Palestinians, okay, fair enough. But then you're destroying the Palestinians in part. It doesn't have to be in whole, it's in part. The intent,
yeah,
you know, you've
I think that, and also I think they very much subdue just how much of killing goes on in the West Bank of Palestinians. But
oh, yeah, I mean, because it was a year ago that they were, like, over a year ago that they were saying there's 40,000. And you're telling me that over the past year there hasn't even been, like, it's slowed down and they've only been killing 20,000 people.
And by the way, with no food
and everybody under rubble, really?
Yeah, and by the way, this didn't start 21 months ago. Yeah, okay, they've escalated.
Right,
They used October 7th so they could up the ante, but it's been going on a lot longer than that. I mean, so anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so, and with the intent, I mean, Netanyahu is extremely clear when he's invoking Amalek. That's extremely clear. Why would you invoke Amalek if you're not trying to wipe out everybody? That's a story about wiping out everybody. Ben-Gvir and Smoltrich, who are senior members of the cabinet, both leaders of coalition parties, have made even more genocidal statements. And then it's not just the leaders. There's all these public opinion polls where you're having majorities of, I mean, you're having about half of the Israeli population at this point is saying, yeah, we should kill them all. We should just kill them all.
And there was a poll. There's a poll done not that long ago. The 82% of them support Netanyahu's policy in Gaza.
Yeah, and out of the ones that don't, most of those don't think he's going hard enough.
Yeah.
So there's just a tiny bit of people who oppose what the government's doing, a tiny bit of Israelis. So this guy, you know, I'll say he doesn't, he obviously isn't familiar with the Convention on Genocide. But, you know, if you think that, and fair enough, does everybody need to walk around all day knowing what the UN legal definition of genocide is? Whatever. I mean, it's...
Well, like Lavelle said, he said, yeah, I really need a legal definition. He said, I've got my eye.
Yeah. Whether you want to... I mean, this term genocide, it's not even 100 years old. It was invented shortly after World War II. Probably it was...
It served the Jewish interests.
Yeah, and it was probably invented specifically so that they could create this this convention. But yeah, it served Jewish interests when they were trying to rev up this story about the intention to wipe out their people, the final solution.
You got to hand it to them. What a tremendous spirit. You know, as much as they tried, 6 million of them, they rose, and they rose quickly and powerfully in about, what, 3 years?
Yeah. Yeah, real fast.
Anglin
had an interesting article from the past couple of weeks, just pointing out that like everything that the Jews say about what's okay, what the Israeli Jews are saying about Gaza, it's all been bull honk. There weren't 40 babies beheaded. There weren't gang rapes. There weren't people stuck in ovens and burned. I mean, they're just lying and lying and lying.
Yeah, again, it's like the Holocaust, you know, all lampshades.
He's challenging. What he's doing is Anglin is challenging his readers to say, well, if they're lying and lying and lying and lying now, why do you think that everything that they said about something that happened 80 years ago is true? Why do you think that they only told the truth then, and now all of a sudden they only lie? And of course, the Jewish lies go way beyond Gaza. I mean, just look at so many of these hoaxes. I mean, even COVID is primarily a Jewish hoax. There's so many hoaxes out there, and so they're why would people think that they're so honest that you can believe these stories? And people, more and more and more and more people aren't believing them. People are going back. The younger generation isn't hung up about this. And the thing about my generation, the boomer generation, we weren't brought up on the Holocaust. I didn't know the word Holocaust. I'd never heard the word Holocaust until probably the mid 1970s. And when I first heard it, I didn't know what it was. There was this TV miniseries called Roots, one of the original miniseries, and what that might have been like 1975 or so, Roots. And so that was about black people being in slavery, and it was really dramatic, and everybody watched it. And so right after, like maybe the next year, they came out with, I don't know what it was called, but it was about the Jewish Holocaust. Well, I didn't know the word Holocaust. I didn't get brought up with this. And if you go to, I still have the encyclopedia set that was in our house from the time I was born, and I've pulled it out and I've looked up Hitler, the H book. This is the Encyclopedia Britannica. I think it's a 1949 edition. You take out the H and you look up Holocaust and it says a burnt offering. That's all it says. It says a burnt offering. Well, okay, maybe the term Holocaust wasn't in common parlance then. Okay, fine. You look up Hitler and they have a lot on Hitler. And, a couple of big, dense pages on Hitler. And it talks about Kristallnacht and it talks about, Nuremberg laws. But it doesn't say a word about death camps, not a word. And if this was written 4 years after the end of World War II, if they could write that he committed suicide in a bunker, why didn't they think to put in this detail about the homicidal death camps that killed 6 million people? Why didn't they do that in my Encyclopedia Britannica? They didn't do it, and so we grow up on it. Now I did hear stories about soap and lampshades. I heard that. Didn't think much about it, but these stories were kind of floating around out there. But basically, when my dad, who is a World War II vet,
what actually is the soap story?
The soap story is that the After killing the Jews, they boiled down their body. They used their like body fat to make soap. Because
okay, so you
this is a story.
So, yeah.
Because wouldn't Germans just love to rub the fat of dead Jews all over their body?
I was going to say. So you hate these people so much, you're going to commit a Holocaust with them, and then you're going to stand in the shower, whistling, singing in the shower with washing yourself with Jewish soap. I suppose it's a little bit of a stretch. I guess it's possible, but God.
And man, using the skin for lampshades.
The Jews come out with these things, but people believe them. Anyway, you know, it's interesting. I will say this about these guys. You're not going to hear Mercurius even getting into this territory. If that came up, Mercurius would say, I have to be careful what I say. It's like, well, why do you have to be careful about so much what you say? You're making a living. Or maybe that's why.
That is why.
I'd have been, yeah, you're making a living out of being some sort of leading voice, leading light in the alternative media space. Well, if you have to be so careful about everything you say, go and be a plumber or something. Do something else. You know? I've heard comments from these guys and Mark Sloboda, who's also been an RT, make snidey remarks about a certain person, blah, blah, blah. And I'm pretty sure they're talking about Mercurius. You know, it's like he has got good insights and things. Even yesterday, he was starting to talk about the. I want to give my warmest regards to the American people for their independence on July 4th and freeing themselves from the British and the British. Okay, well, the British are now on their backsides and are a pathetic nation with no power anymore. So that liberty in the United States should be just going through the roof. It should be just a wave of global liberty spreading through the world, Patrick, because you got liberated from the evils of the British. But, of course, we know that it wasn't the British. The same people that now run your country and are causing your country to be wrecked controlled the British Empire. You know, like I said, otherwise, where's all this great liberty in the United States, you know, now that the British are completely non-entity. Anyway, Mercurius, he just needs to be, I don't know, he's probably a weird kid, I think. And now he's a bit older, he's got some friends, you know, and he likes to be warm with everybody. Never wants to say anything too controversial, you know.
Well,
I don't know.
I don't know, have you ever seen bullfighting?
Yes.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I saw it live in Spain.
You saw it live in Spain. I never saw it live in Spain, but for whatever reason, my dad, he used to watch bullfighting on UHF TV. Channel 20 or something? You go to UHF TV, and they had bullfighting, and so it would be from Spain, sometimes from Mexico. Was there another Portugal sometimes? And so, why? I mean, I didn't like it because they were killing an animal. I was always rooting for the bull. But for whatever reason, I mean, I love my dad and everything. I don't know why he was so interested, fascinated by bullfighting. But so I did grow up watching bullfighting. And I can't remember all of the various people that would come out. The matador. That's the star of the show. That's the person who actually killed the bull. But before the matador can kill the bull, you've got there are these guys that run around and they like they put little daggers in the back of the bull and
that's
run
right.
Away.
It's not a fair fight.
I can't remember what they're called. And then there are these people who come out on horses, the kind of armored horses. And they've got long spears. Those are called picadors. You remember right. The term picador?
Yeah.
So the picador, and the way I look at it is these people who, you know, maybe like you could be Alex Jones or whatever, or it could be Mercurius or the judge, and they talk about real problems, but they never get to the core of it. These are picadors. These are people that are just kind of like getting the bull mad, but they're never going to be the one to slay
the matador.
No, and the matador is. I mean, David Duke has been a matador, right? And the matadors don't always succeed in the end, and the matadors can get gored. And David Duke has been kind of gored, but he's been a matador. The thing is, the only difference. Is that in bullfighting, the matador is the most celebrated one. In
picadors get all the glory in this situation.
Yeah, in Jew fighting, it's the picadors that get all the acclaim, all the money, but they're never going to slay the bull. They're never going to slay the bull. And the matadors, they not only do they take on all the risks, but they get none of the glory. And they're not the matadors are not going to come, or they're not going to emerge from the destruction of the Jewish power structure to lead the countries. It's going to be these people who held back. They're going to sweep in, and they want to be in position to sweep in and lead the countries. After the matadors, David Duke or Kanye West or whatever. They're gonna hop over the dead bodies and go in and get all the glory.
Indeed. So we've only got about maybe 8 minutes left. I think maybe 10. I don't. So they go on then to talk about Netanyahu coming and the future. Where's Trump going to be at with all this? And let's discuss that for a minute. I mean, isn't it time Trump just said enough? I mean, he thought that he was going to bomb. The Israelis were on the back foot. Israel's getting wrecked. So he dropped his big bomb so they could have an off-ramp and say, oh, we've dealt with the problem. But then Bibi's coming back again, knocking. Hey, Donald, we got more bombing to do. Or ideally, if you could send over, some troops into Iran, that would be good. That was what I was really hoping for. When is Trump going to say, I'm sick of this guy? Or does Trump even think that? I mean, what do you think is going to happen? When is this visit happening? Monday? Tomorrow?
I don't know. I don't know. He's coming over soon, and this will be the third time he's come over since Trump came back to the White House on January 20th. He hasn't been back for half a year, and this is the third time Netanyahu's come over. It's disgusting, but people in the United States are turning anti-Israel, and now you're getting these polls released on CNN. Showing that there's just been this massive swing against Israel in public opinion, and whereas what was it? There was it's like a 50-point swing or something. I mean, maybe the Americans were 75% in favor of Israel 4 years ago, and now they're only 25% in favor of Israel. There's been a massive swing, especially among younger people, but there's been movement in all age groups, and it's going to continue. And this is a huge problem for the Jews. And Netanyahu showing up and saying, can Donald come out and play again? I don't think it's going to go over well. And one last thing, Anglin had another good article saying that this is very likely to become an electoral issue. And there's lots of for ambitious politicians, they're turning against Israel. Maybe for aspiring, not so much for existing politicians because they've made their bed and probably have to sleep in it. But for aspiring politicians, like this guy from this Indian guy, 33-year-old Indian guy in New York, to come out and be anti-Israel, could be a very winning proposition.
Yeah, and Tucker Carlson has announced that he's going to be doing an interview with the Iranian president.
Okay. Now, I've never heard the Iranian president talk. Pezeshkian, is that his name?
Pezeshkian, that's him. Pezeshkian. Tucker Carlson has announced that he's going to be doing an interview with him in a couple of days. Carlson should maybe just do the interview and get it out instead of announcing, because he might slip in a banana skin before you know it. I wouldn't put anything past him.
Yeah. Hopefully Pezeshkian will do well. I have never really heard him talk much. He's only been there for a year. And they have presidential elections, multi-party presidential elections, and Pezeshkian is not a hardliner. He's somebody who wanted to improve relations with Russia. With China, with America. And how's that working out? That's not working out so well. So we'll see how he does. I think the supreme leader is a lot more based.
Well, Trump has had no successes. He was on the phone to Putin the other day, and Putin basically said, Sorry, we're cracking on. You have a good day, Donald. He hasn't done anything in Gaza, and he keeps talking about, we got so close. Well, I mean, you can get so close to winning the Super Bowl, but you're a loser. I think that at 6 months in, unless something dramatically changes, he has established what he's going to be doing post presidency. He can write a follow up to The Art of the Deal called The Art of No Deal.
Yeah.
He can't seem to get a deal. He's getting very close, but no one really cares. So, you know, when is he going to actually tell Bibi sort of enough's enough, Bibi? You know, will that ever happen? Who knows? I doubt it.
It could. Trump he's a wild card. I don't expect anything from him, but he is I acknowledge that he's a wild card. And he could do things that are worse than anybody else, but he's also one of the few people who might be able to do some things that would shake up Jewish power. But to the extent I have hope, my hope is more in Putin and in the Chinese leadership. If I'm going to trust plans, I won't be a plan truster for Trump. I have been a plan truster for Putin. I think, you know, people could accuse me of that, and I wouldn't deny it. And Xi Jinping, you know, the Chinese have made some like economic mistakes, but I think Xi Jinping, I don't have the same feel for him as Putin, because he doesn't do these massive press conferences and interviews. But judging by his record over the past, I guess, 14 years, I think I am a plan truster with Russia and China. I think they seem to know what they're doing pretty well. Trump is...
Yeah, they have a strategy.
They have a strategy. Trump has no idea what he's doing. He might accidentally do the right thing from time to time.
Yeah. All right, Patrick. On that note, thank you very much for joining me. And thank you everyone for tuning in. And we'll be back. No doubt we'll do something in the week. And I'll be back again here next Sunday. And until then, take care and God bless.
I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get More Tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get More Tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.